Tango Tango Papa 2077, October 3rd, 2021.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles are with you, coming to you this evening from Gaston, Indiana. So, gosh, how long has it been since the last podcast? I forgot to look. In any case, I was home for a few days. I took my time off, and it was actually quite an eventful time off, and I've got some stories to tell. Let's see, so that was on the 11th. So it's been a little over half of a month, maybe. Is that right? Yeah. Yep, so it's been a little over half a month since the last podcast, so... In any case, I got home on the 26th of September, and so on the 27th, I had the cataract pre-op appointment in the afternoon. It was like I had to be there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so of course I got there... About 1:45 or so, I went in and they did the pre-op appointment, and so they ran me through a series of machines, and they were different machines than when I'd been in there. Previously I'd gone in and whenever I had the initial appointment. It was just basically an exam type appointment, and so this time there was a series of different machines that were more aimed at cataract type stuff, lens replacement type stuff. So, and of course in that initial exam appointment they kind of confirmed my thought that I had a cataract in my left eye, and I did. So later in the pre-op exam, they did dilate my eyes, or my pupils rather, and I don't think I'd ever had my pupils dilated before. I know a lot of people really don't like that, or they really dislike that. And of course, while I was indoors, because they put the drops in, and then they kind of sat me in the waiting room and waited for a number of minutes for the dilation to take effect. So I never really noticed the room or anything being brighter. Of course, I was indoors. So, but with the pupils dilated, then it allows them to kind of look in the back of the eye more easily, and more accurately. So, and then whenever I left there, I went outside, then I was squinting, because it was fairly bright, and of course I, at that point, had my regular glasses. Now my regular glasses are the type that will sort of tint themselves in the sun. They'll darken down somewhat, not like to a full sunglasses, but they darken down somewhat. But I was still kind of squinting, but I was able to, things were kind of oddly blurry. But I was able to drive, and so I kind of went about my business. And then finally, I don't know, I guess about 6 hours later, pupil size kind of went back to normal, and so that was that. So then, but with the pre-op appointment, they kind of confirmed that, you know, I could have surgery on Thursday. So, you know, that was on Monday. So Tuesday and Wednesday, I kind of did my normal things that I would do while I was at home. And then, so then on Thursday, a friend came and picked me up, because they won't let you, they don't want you driving after the surgery for obvious reasons. So a friend came and picked me up, and, and so took me up to this same place, you know, because they've got two operating rooms on the second floor, this really nice building. Really modern place, all kinds of, you know, all the latest technology. So they brought me in. Now my friend, you know, they made him sign a statement saying he was going to stay there and take me home. You know, because I'm sure they've had people, you know, that kind of ran out on somebody or whatever, because it does take a while. But in any case, made sure the friend, you know, I had one of those kind of the fabric folding chairs, and I thought of that before we left my house. I thought of that, and I said, "You want to bring a chair? You can go outside, and that way you wouldn't have to sit inside, because of course they want everybody inside to have their masks on, and he doesn't like wearing a mask any more than I do, probably even less than I do." So he brought, you know, we brought that chair, and so he was able to go outside and just kind of sit and watch people come and go, you know, the other patients. So in any case, you know, of course they have a fountain out there, and it's a really nice place, nice facility and nice grounds. So anyway, they brought me in, they took me, we rode upstairs in the elevator, and then they had me basically lay down on this gurney type thing, and they got me all positioned, and then they actually, well, in the meantime, on Monday, there were three prescriptions. There was a prescription for a single Valium pill, 10 milligrams, which that's a benzodiazepine, and I've never taken that, and I guess that's to get people to relax or whatever. But I wasn't nervous at all. Now, I know people think, well, you have to be nervous, you're getting your eyes operated on or whatever. I wasn't nervous whatsoever, and I've watched probably at this point thousands of cataract-related videos and a lot on YouTube, and a lot of those are the actual surgery, you know, the surgeon's view through the microscope of the surgery. You know, with the instruments and, you know, what they do. So I was very familiar with the procedures that they go through. So, but I was not nervous at all. But anyway, I took the Valium, and then I laid down on the other two prescriptions, by the way, were for the eye drops. So, and those are, I started those immediately, the 3 days before the surgery. I started, you know, they want you to take those, each one of those drops 3 times a day. There's a steroid drop, and then a, you know, or it's anti-inflammatory. And then also an antibiotic, some sort of an antibiotic drop. So you start those 3 days prior to the surgery, and then, but in any case, they had me take the Valium, that single Valium tablet, and lay down on the gurney, and then they actually, they, at that facility, they do start an IV, because, you know, I've watched enough videos to know some places do IVs, and, you know, some of them, there's no IVs, but they had me lay back, and they started the, there were about, I don't know, three different nurses there. So one of them was putting a blood pressure cuff on my left arm. And then another one, and then she also put, you know, like put a heart monitor. And then this other one on the other side was doing the IV, which was kind of on the back of my right hand. And then the third woman was, putting in all these different drops, you know, like numbing drops and, you know, it wasn't terrible, but it was kind of unpleasant because some of the drops burned a little bit. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's one thing for me to put eye drops in my own eyes, but when someone else is kind of, you know, prying your eye open and, you know, eyes open and putting drops in, that's, you know, but I tolerated it and she got all the drops in. And then, by the way, you know, I'd said, well, I was going to do one eye. Well, they talked me into doing both eyes. And really, so I decided that really the best, you know, it's just do both. They wanted to do both eyes at the same time. And I really thought, you know, I got to thinking, yeah, it'd be better. Because what I didn't want to happen, and I don't think this would happen, but what I didn't want to happen was, you know, with all of this political turmoil that's going on surrounding this, this virus, who knows if there's, you know, look at Australia and what they're going through. It's just, what's happening in Australia is insanity. And that's supposedly a free Western country. And it's just, it's like, some sort of Soviet Union type stuff happening, or even worse than that, or, you know, something like you'd think you'd see in East Berlin. It's just insane what's going on. And if it can happen in Australia, maybe it could happen here. So who knows what's going to happen in between. So if I, you know, got one eye done and then waited a month, who knows what would happen in between. You know, would I be able to get the second eye done? Because there were actually people, if you look back in probably, when was it, maybe May of 2019, when all this lockdown mania started, they stopped all elective surgeries. And there were people that died because of they stopped the surgeries. And I'm sure there were people that had had one, guarantee you there were people that probably had one cataract surgery done and then couldn't do the other one because of they've stopped all elective surgery. So I didn't want to, you know, that was kind of in the back of my mind. I didn't want to take the chance. So I thought, do both of them. So in any case, they put all the drops in and then, told me to just lay there, relax. They had a little, kind of cover up to my waist, and you know, just in case I thought, you know, I was cold or whatever. Now they didn't have me change clothes at all, or they didn't even have me take my boots off. They said just lay right back here, and we'll cover you up with this cover. And so she was like up to my waist, and so I just laid there and relaxed. And I don't know how long I laid there, but I thought that I was conscious the whole time, and it was weird. But I really did think that I was conscious the entire time, and so. But at one point, I became aware that he was working on my right eye. Because I knew that, you know, the eye, I could kind of feel the eye was propped open. And I could hear him talking. I don't really know what they said, but I could hear him talking to the other people around him. I could hear them talking. The doctor was on my right side at that point because he's working on my right eye. And then, and this would happen very quickly. And then at one point, the vision in the right eye just went completely black. you know, and that was, and that, you know, that that just lasted for a few seconds. And I think why it went black at that point, that was probably the point where he was injecting the, you know, because they have this little injector thing that they have the intraocular lens sort of rolled up in this, you know, they call it like a burrito style, you know, they sort of roll it up and put it in this little injector, and then, you know, sort of a piston action injects it into the little two millimeter incision, 2.5 millimeter incision. That's the largest incision of the incisions that they have. You know, that's how they get, you know, that lens in the eye, because they're able to roll it up, and then once it gets in the eye, then it is able to, it actually kind of has a memory, and it just expands back into its normal shape. And then the surgeon very carefully puts it where it's supposed to be. And so, but in any case, it went black for a bit. But it was strange, because even though it was black, and of course the other eye was closed, and they drape you. If you ever watch any of these videos, they drape the patient's head so that the only thing that's exposed is the eye that they're working on, that the doctor's working on. And of course that eye is propped open with it's a device called a speculum. And it's designed to kind of grab a hold of the lower and upper eyelids, and just hold it. You know, it's under. You know, it's kind of spring action. It kind of holds the eye open so that the doctor can work on the eye. So, you know, then it went black there for a few seconds, and then then the vision kind of returned, or you know, the light kind of returned. And I thought, you know, then they got done with that, and I thought, well, they're going to be doing the left eye then next. Well, they were already done. they did the left eye first, and I didn't even, you know, I was completely unconscious of that, but I thought that I was conscious the entire time. Now, one thing, you know, so I think that they gave me probably some sort of sedation through the IV, because I don't think the Valium wouldn't have caused me to lose consciousness, or lose the ability to kind of make memories. So they could have given me Versed. That's one of the things that some of the ophthalmologists use, and I don't know if what they used. I guess I could ask them. But in any case, I thought I was conscious the entire time, but I wasn't. You know, I kind of became conscious when they were working on the, you know, towards the end of working on the right eye. And of course, these surgeries go really quick. You know, maybe 5 to 10 minutes on each eye, and they're done. So they go quick. So, you know, now I have had surgery, you know, years and years ago. I had like 1980, I had a ruptured appendix. So I had this appendectomy. So I was under, kind of a general anesthesia when I had that appendectomy. And it was really weird, because it was like I had a continuous conscious experience, except, you know, I knew when they were about to start the surgery, and then all of a sudden they said, well, we're done with the surgery. And literally for me, from my perspective, no time had passed whatsoever. Had a similar experience a number of years later when I had my wisdom teeth taken out. The dentist used some sort of general anesthesia, and exactly the same experience. It was like switching off a light, you know, just switching off my conscience, and then switched it back on, and then it was seamless. And so that was kind of what happened with this. because I was not aware at all. You know, maybe the doctor came in and he might have been talking to me, and I may have responded to commands. You know, look at the light or do this or do that, and I may have responded, but I have no memory of it at all. But I really did think, well, they're doing the right eye, now they're going to go around and do the left eye. Well, nope, the left eye was already done. So in any case, they had me, the doctor was all, you know, they, I guess they must have rolled me into a recovery area. I wasn't in the operating room anymore, because I think I was back at, the area where they initially had me, they were prepping me, had me lay down on the gurney. So they said, it's over with, and so they placed, because a lot of times, you may have seen somebody that has cataract surgery, they tape these sort of bulbous plastic shields, around the eye that they operated on. If they do both of them, then they'd have two bulbous, that they just use this really sticky tape, and they stick it to your face and your forehead. Well, what they do there, it's actually, the name of it's Vold Vision, it's Dr. Stephen Vold, Fayetteville, Arkansas. What they do there, they had, it's kind of like swimming goggles, so they're just sort of like, a really, they're rounded to kind of fit your face, but they're sort of a flat goggles with a plastic, kind of a clear plastic. So it's really a goggle, almost like some motorcycle goggles or different types of goggles that people would wear, with an elastic band that goes around the back of your head and holds that on. And so the idea is, right after the surgery, they send you off with those, and then they tell you, you can take them off, but be careful, and don't touch your eyes, don't be rubbing your eyes, but you need to sleep in these for at least, like a couple of weeks, in case you would try to rub your eyes while you're in your sleep. They don't want you putting any pressure on your eyes, obviously, so you have to resist the temptation to be messing with your eyes. It's not a good idea to really rub your eyes very hard anyway, because you can actually cause serious problems by doing that. I found that out through listening to a lot of these videos, because you can actually cause serious trouble if you're constantly rubbing your eye really hard. Either, because if somebody's going to rub one eye, they're going to probably rub both of them. People with allergies do that. So, anyway, they did both eyes, and so immediately after the surgery, then they took me to the instead of having me come back the next day to do a one-day post-op, what they do there, they just take you, to the optometrist that works there. There's several optometrists that work there. So they took me to this female optometrist that kind of had initially worked me up, and and of course my vision at that point was atrocious. It was super super foggy, just unbelievably foggy. Everything was blurry, and of course I think I was still under the effects of the maybe the anesthesia, because I was kind of I had to be careful, because I was kind of didn't have all that great a balance, and I was kind of I noticed that I was kind of catching my foot on, my right foot on the carpet, the heel of my foot, heel of the boot, so but in any case, she looked, got the slit lamp and looked and made sure, they want to make sure that because I did go for the trifocal lenses, panoptics, trifocal lenses, and talk about that a little bit more in a bit. So that it's really critical with those, with a like a trifocal lens, like a panoptics, is really, really critical to get that exactly positioned in the right place. And of course, with the all of the tech, you know, the laser systems that they have and all of the technology they have, it really assists them in doing that and getting that trifocal lens exactly where it needs to be. So in any case, she looked and everything looked great, and she said, they told me, yep, surgery went fine, no problems. So then I was, you know, off with my friend, and then on the way home we stopped in a Mexican restaurant. There's a Mexican restaurant in West Fork called Chihuahua, you know. So we went in there, and you know, I could see to eat. I was able to, you know, see that well enough I could eat. You know, as far, you know, but I knew what to order, so I didn't, you know, there was no reading the menu. So then he, my friend, after we got done eating, he took me on up the hill and dropped me off at home, and, you know, we put the chair back in, you know, okay, because that chair, you know, that folding fabric chair that is from Academy, I think I paid like 10 bucks for it. I keep it in the trunk of my car, just in case, you know, and so I always leave that in the trunk of the car. So we got that put back in the trunk of the car, and then he, you know, he left, and so I was at home. And so I initially thought, well, I'm going to try watching television. Well, that didn't work out so well. Even with a 65-inch screen, that was not too good of an experience. So then, you know, kind of, but I was able to cook. So I got my pressure cooker out, and I was able to do some cooking. And so I cooked a piece of meat in the pressure cooker, and that actually turned out pretty good. So I was able to cook, but then, you know, later in the evening, you know, and I tried to, you know, get on the computer, and so I, you know, got the, you know, it's like a 27-inch. HP, you know, it's like an all-in-one machine, and I was trying to, you know, I was looking at Facebook and what have you, and trying to, you know, and I actually did post a picture. You may have seen the picture that I posted with me in the goggles, you know, and I said that I'd gotten cataract surgery, you know, both eyes, that earlier in, you know, earlier Thursday afternoon, and or in the morning actually. So but in order to do that, I was, you know, of course, on a Windows machine or a Mac, you know, on a Windows machine you hold down the control key, and then if you got a, you know, the scroll button on, you know, in the center of your mouse, you scroll in, you scroll up and it zooms in, you know. And on a Mac, you just hold down the command key and do the same things. Center button, or the center scroll wheel on a mouse, you push up and it zooms in. So I zoomed the thing in as much as I could, and I still really couldn't read the text on the screen, even though it was big. So then the only way I could kind of read was you know, so that I could actually sort of write, and it was a struggle. But I had, you know, I got my, you know, magnifying glass, and so here I was like Mr. Magoo, trying to see individual letters, you know, words. So I was able to, you know, kind of manage. It wasn't, you know, it took a long time, but I was able to do it okay. You know, and it gave me a new appreciation for people that, you know, that have so-called low vision, you know, because it really is a, you know, it's a struggle just to see where the mouse cursor is. You know, of course, then, you know, you can kind of compensate for that by making the mouse cursor bigger, you know, make it great big and make it black instead of just sort of a white transparent thing. So, you know, so there's kind of things you can do to help in that situation. So in any case, by the time I, you know, late in the evening when I decided I was going to go to bed, I noticed that my right eye was not quite as hazy as it had been. So the haze in the right eye had started to lift a little bit. So I went ahead and put the, you know, went to bed, you know, brushed my teeth and all that, and went through that routine, and I went to bed with the goggles and was able to sleep. And then once I woke up the next morning, that would have been Friday morning, the right eye was actually in pretty decent shape. The haze was completely gone at that point, Friday morning, in the right eye. And I could actually look out and, you know, like out of my truck, you know, parked out in my driveway, and I could read the lettering on the side of the door. You know, so that, and then, you know, so the right eye kind of was clearing up, had cleared up pretty good at that point. But the left eye, Friday morning, was still just as hazy and just as blurry as ever, you know, and really, you know, and of course, along with this was really low contrast. You know, that was also part of the thing in both eyes. So, but I could see well enough to drive, so I met my friend Gene at 1 o'clock up in Springdale. So I was able to drive okay with the, you know, just using kind of my right eye. You know, the left one was sort of hazy and blurry. But then during lunch, I noticed that the haze was starting to dissipate in the left eye. And it was actually becoming a little bit less blurry. And so as the day wore on, there was less and less haze. And it was almost completely gone later, you know, in the evening. The haze was pretty well, was mostly gone, but it was still blurry somewhat. The blurriness had improved pretty good in the left eye, but it was still a little bit blurry. And so I went to bed, and then whenever I got up, let's see, so that Thursday and then Friday. So when I got up Saturday morning, the left eye had, you know, it had gotten much better. And in fact, I think, you know, I really didn't try to measure it, but I think I've got 20/20 vision at this point, you know, both eyes together. You know, now the vision has always been more correctable in my right eye than it has in the left. You know, and that the right eye is my dominant eye, but the vision in my right eye has always been just a little bit more correctable than the left eye. With that being said, with both eyes together, I can actually see better than I can with the right eye by itself. Even though the right eye is just maybe, you know, just what's, you know, it's just slightly more correctable. You know, somewhat more correctable. So with both eyes together, I'm seeing great. I think it's as good as it ever has been with any of the glasses or contact lenses that I've had, you know, even when I was younger. So I'm seeing really good. But here's the part with the trifocal lenses. I'd read all this stuff and watched all these videos about trifocal lenses. People seeing halos and glare, and you know, and some people just really couldn't stand it, and other people thought, well, it wasn't any big deal. And then they talked about why your brain has to adapt, because you've actually got three different images that are being projected on the retina, and the brain has to adapt to being able to determine which image to look at or to perceive and reject the other ones. Well, here's my experience. Now, this is just my experience. There was no adaptation. So I can see things, you know, like if I put my phone, let's say, 10 inches in front of my face, it's perfectly readable with no glasses. It's perfectly readable. Or if I, you know, if I'm, you know, if I look at something like I'm driving and I look at, you know, I've got a couple of GPSs up on the dash, they're perfectly clear. The LCD display in the center of the truck dash is perfectly clear. You know, I look off in the distance and it's clear. You know, so and of course I'm always looking around, you know, and I think that's most people. You're looking close, you're looking far away, you're looking, someplace intermediate, and you're just doing that constantly, you know. And if you've got a natural lens, of course, that's always just perfectly, you know, if it works right, it just shifts automatically. But in the case, you know, so in the case of this trifocal lens, it's just perfectly seamless. So my vision is just sharp I'd say at least, maybe like, I haven't really measured it, but I'd say at least 10 inches in front of my face to infinity. It just seems sharp. It seems seamless, no matter where I look. Furthermore, as far as glare, man, really there's no glare. As far as halos go, I really don't see any difference from before the surgery and after the surgery. So that's not a problem. And sometimes people will say, well, the trifocal lenses split the light, and you may have reduced contrast. Well, you know, my contrast is actually improved from what it was. You know, so I'm seeing just as well, and I was seeing okay at night. Because that's one of the things that people say. You know, they get cataracts and they say I can't see to drive at night or whatever, or I have a hard time seeing. Well, it's not a problem. You know, it, and maybe it's because I've driven so much at night that, you see with your brain primarily. You know, I've talked about this before, but a lot of the way we perceive the world happens in our brain. You know, so, but in any case, even prior to the cataract surgery, I was seeing okay to drive, and I was, kind of see okay. So that actually hasn't changed at all. In fact, it may have improved a little bit. So, I am just as pleased as I can be. Now that's, everybody may, other people may have a different experience. You know, and part of that probably also depends on the surgeon and, the surgeons that I went to, this Dr. Vold. Like I was saying, he's got all the latest technology. They're using, the laser machine to they make a circular opening in the sac that holds the natural lens. And it's really critical. That's one of the most critical steps in surgery. And, of course, a computer, if they're using a computer system attached to a laser, femtosecond laser, the computer can make a perfectly circular opening every time, and the doctor's able to control where he wants it before he initiates it. It takes it about 40 seconds, it creates that circular opening. It goes ahead and breaks up the lens so that they don't have to use as much ultrasound energy, during the manual part of the operation where they're vacuuming out the cataract material. And then it also creates the incisions. It creates a couple of incisions, and then in the case of someone that has astigmatism, it also makes some astigmatism incision correct, you know, to correct some degree of astigmatism, if that's present. And so that's all done by the, you know, by this laser within about a 40-second period of time. You know, and so it's, but it's really critical with the trifocal lens. It's really, really critical to get that, it's called a capsule rexus, that circular opening. It's really critical to get that sized properly. It's, you know, typically it's about a 5 millimeter, you know, in diameter circle. And it's really critical to get that placed in the, put in the right place, so that the they can position the lens properly. And so there's all kinds of things that go in. You know, everyone's eye is not, you know, it's not just a standard model of eye. You know, the anatomy is all kind of the same, but everyone's eyes, every eye is different. And so they have to really sort of figure out from eye to eye where they're going to, you know, where they're going to, you know, where they want to, exactly where they want this, where it's going to give the very best result. And you know, and then of course you have a surgeon that's done thousands and thousands of procedures, you know, that really, you know, kind of knows what he's doing. That also figures into it. There really is no what's the word I'm looking for? There's no, replacement for experience. That's not really the word I'm looking for, but it kind of gets the idea across. There's, you know, you can't really replace experience. You want someone that's really experienced, you know, to get the, you know, to get the best possible outcome. And I really believe I have, at this point, the best possible outcome. It's, you know, because I was expecting, you know, there's going to be some degree of compromise. And actually, there really isn't. You know, so I'm absolutely amazed. And, it, you know, now it's been, so today was Sunday, so the surgery happened on, today was Sunday, I think. So the surgery happened on Thursday, so we have Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it's been a little over 3 days. You know, of course, I'm still doing the drops 3 times a day, and I'll continue to do the drops until they're gone, you know, which that's upwards of 3 weeks to a month. You know, and I wear the kind of those goggles over, you know, put those on whenever I go to bed, and they'll keep those on the entire time I'm in bed and, you know, sleep or whatever. And then when I am awake, I'm really careful about not touching my eyes or just kind of unconsciously rubbing them or whatever. But now I did come back to work yesterday. I came back to work, and so, but I do, you know, and I'd warned the asset manager that I needed to come back. I have an appointment in the afternoon on the 8th, the 1 week post-op, and then there will be a 1 month post-op checkup, and so he's going to get me back. He said he'd get me back on the 7th, and then, you know, have the post-op appointment on the 8th, and then my plan is to then just immediately go back to work and, you know, and then be gone for, you know, until the next appointment, basically, whenever that is. So that turned out really well. Just better than I could really hope to hope for. It's just really amazing, just absolutely, astounding. So that really did work out, So anyway, I've got a couple of voice files from Joel. So let's see if we can start playing the. Ooh, I talked for 44 minutes. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to play one of the files and then maybe save the second one for. I'll maybe make another podcast here pretty soon. Hopefully. I don't want to make this podcast too long, so we'll do Joel's first file. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Joel McLaughlin here, listening to your latest, finally. Just wanted to say, hey, and kind of, at least from my side, more kind of inventions on the virus. And I do not know if they've had the vaccine. But I do know my brother-in-law and his wife, they had a birthday party for their granddaughter. Or I don't know if they had it, or probably her mom had it. And they attended it. And unfortunately, both of them got COVID. But thus far, I think everything's going okay. I haven't heard any turns for the worse with them. But further, though, since a lot of this stuff came down from Biden, which, that still remains to be seen if it's actually going to be constitutional. No one's really actually come out and said, several companies, the Daily Wire, several other companies, their category, they said they're not going to do it, and they're going to go to court over it, too. If it goes that far, which so far it hasn't yet. They haven't done anything about it yet. I'm not even convinced that Biden even remembered that he said anything about it. So, or signed the EO. But, in any regard, Columbus, Bexley, trying to remember who else. A lot of these really more liberal communities, ones that had surprised me that haven't said it yet was Dublin, or even where I live now, Grove City, they have not. And others have basically said, oh, wow, we got to wear masks again. Well, I'm not so sure about Hilliard. We generally, at least since we moved to Grove City, we generally don't go to Columbus very, very often anyway, although my church is in Columbus. And the week that that happened, my church had a car show and fish fry, nobody wearing masks. Well, very, very few wearing masks. And I don't have a problem with that. It doesn't bother me none, because I know in the science, the actual science of looking at whether they actually do something, and what other places that have never lifted their mask restrictions or mandates, I should say, that they too have had spikes as well. So, for me, they pretty much don't exist. But the beauty of it all is the few, very few places I have had to go. Whitehall was another one. Nobody's really enforcing it. The stores generally don't care. I've gone to several places in Columbus, not trying to, just because I had to. And other than, ironically, Walgreens, we had to go to a Walgreens to get medicine for my son because that was the only Walgreens in the area that had it. And they made my wife wear a mask, and they didn't hassle my son that much because he actually has a medical exemption for that because he has Asperger's or otherwise like a form of autism, and he basically will become mentally unstable if you force him to wear the mask. He will possibly get violent. So rather than have that, you know, we had his psychologist write up a note so he doesn't have to wear one. So, but nobody's really enforcing these rules. I went to several places in around the area that have these. No one's really caring. Hilliard, Sam's Club went to it several times since then. We go to about every week. Nothing. Same thing goes with about the only kind of thing that I noticed was we had our dryer go out this week, actually last week. And I put a call in on Monday and they came and fixed Tuesday. The guy was wearing a mask, which I understand that. Yeah. But they didn't make us wear masks. They just, you know, their employees had to wear a mask. I have noticed there are in certain areas that more people actually wearing masks, you know, and I'm like, I don't care. You chicken, go ahead and wear your mask. You know, I don't care. But you know, you're not going to force me to wear one. So largely it's been ineffective. So we go back to the thing that everyone's looking at the higher stat here, which is cases in every respect, but nobody's paying attention to that the fact that, okay, the cases are actually almost as high as they were this time last year, but the deaths are nowhere close. In fact, many times, depending on when the statistics hit, they are usually zero. So, you know, and the thing that just bothers the heck out of me is everyone wants to use science, but they don't want to actually look at all the science, you know, before they go ahead and pass mandate.
Okay, let me break in here real quick. What you just, you know, you're talking about the masks and, a lot of places they got the signs back up, mask required or whatever. And some people, you know, I don't do it, and nobody's saying a word to me, you know, so screw that. And I don't think that, I really don't believe the masks do anything anyway. But what you said made me realize something. You said that they want to use science, or they claim they want to use science, but they don't want to use all of it. And here is what I realized. How often have you thought about, well, people want to be religious and they want to use the Bible, but they don't want to use all of it? Kind of an interesting comparison. You know, it's, you know, your religion. You want to use some of it, but don't want to use all of it. And that kind of, you know, reinforces my idea that all of this is a religion. These people are ideologically possessed, and I'm talking about the people that claim, you know, that science. They're ideologically possessed by it. It's a religion for them. It's a, you can think of ideological possessions as sort of faulty, crippled religions. You know, sort of faulty religions. And so they'll gladly use some, you know, some of the science. They'll gladly use if it's sort of if they think it reinforces their whatever it is, the ideologies that they're possessed by, they'll use it. But then if it goes against it, they ignore it. So it's the same difference. It's like someone, you know, claiming they believe in the Bible, but then they sort of there are parts of it that they ignore, or you know, or you know, or but it's you get the idea. Same thing. You know, you're dealing with people primarily that are ideologically possessed. And the thing is, they don't think they are. The people that are ideologically possessed, the person that's ideologically possessed doesn't, you know, they'll swear up and down that they're not. It's the same thing, you know, if someone acts out of the suggestion of someone else, let's say you act because of a salesman kind of manipulated you and suggested that you buy this or that, and then your rationalization instantly kicks in and you say, oh no, I did it because I wanted to. Was the salesman trying to pressure you? Oh yeah, he was. I saw it. Why did you buy? Oh, because I wanted to. Same kind of thing. So these people are, you know, you're just seeing the results of ideological possession. It's not, and you can try arguing with them all day long and, you know, telling them that they're not following the science and, you know, it goes in one ear and out the other. They don't want to hear it. They think, in their own minds, they think that they've got it all worked out. The ideology all sort of works for them, at least in their own mind. You know, and then, you know, you try to present them with, you know, other pesky little facts and details. They're not going to listen. They can't listen, in fact. It's really, if you're ideologically possessed, it is next to impossible to really listen to someone and consider another viewpoint. That's another aspect of that. That's another aspect of ideological possession, is that you really can't consider an alternate viewpoint, because the ideological possession won't let you. And it really is possession. You know, you're a slave of whatever the ideology is, whatever the idea is, or set of ideas. You are actually a slave of it. So, just wanted to make that point, because that, as soon as you said that, I had that realization.
The real truth here is nobody knows what the heck they're doing. So, on a lighter note, later this week, I do have some vacation, and the one thing I'm planning on doing is I am planning on going for a walk at the Scioto Grove Metro Park here. It's real close to my house, and it has a hiking path that goes right down by the Scioto River. That is, unless it's covered over, because we have had quite a bit of rain lately. We didn't get hit as hard as Pennsylvania got hit real hard by that one hurricane. Don't even remember the name of it, but they got hit hard by a hurricane. We got a little bit of it, but not a tremendous amount. I am assuming the water's going to be fairly high, but we'll see. I definitely want to go down there and take some pictures. I may also charge up the drone too, and then there's also kind of a day trip I'd like to do. There is a place, and this is an interesting place to go to if you're ever through the area. It's neat. There's a couple of them in Cincinnati. There's a store called Jungle Jim's International Market, and there's one in Fairfield, Ohio, I think. So I don't know if you ever go through that area, you may want to check it out. They basically have a pretty amazing deli and cheese department. They have international foods all across the store, from pretty much every country. They have a hot sauce section, which has pretty much every hot sauce there is known to man. Not sure if you go for hot sauce or not, but it's just a really interesting store, and they have all. It looks like they have a lot of animatrons and stuff like that in it too. Be pretty interesting place to go and take some pictures of. So, but in any event, that's how life is in here in Ohio. And started a new podcast with some friends of mine, Chris Spera, Chris Gavula, and Larry McJunkin, called the iTech Gear Weekly or biweekly, for lack of a better term. I'm not exactly sure what we're going to name the podcast yet, but that is interesting thing I think. We had a show that we talked about the Apple event that just happened, which was kind of a meh event for most of us. New iPad mini, a new base level iPad, which is pretty neat. Kind of a lackluster watch release. So we talked about that and some other things. And then, of course, I think the next show we're going to talk about the Surface event, which is next week. So I'm kind of excited about being able to talk about that. And I'm also going to start writing for iTechGear.org, I think it is the name of the website. I haven't wrote anything yet for it, but I'm planning on it. So kind of moved on from the website I used to write for just because of life. They were wanting me to commit to writing like two articles a week, and I just can't. So I'm lucky if I can get one. So I decided it's time to step away. So that's where I'm going with that. And then I got a Galaxy Note 10 Plus, which I absolutely love still. It's still a good phone. But I'm starting to get towards the end of the payment plan. I don't have that many more to go. Depending on what happens, because the frustrating thing for me is I was looking on Verizon's website. I'm still with Verizon. And one of the phones I'm kind of semi-interested in is the Surface Duo, which essentially is it's a foldable without the folding, the screen that actually folds. It's basically two screens with a hinge in the middle. That really looks promising to me. And I think it's supposed to work with the Surface Pen, which I already have, because I have a Surface Pro 6. But they're also going to talk about releasing new Surface devices and stuff like that. So right now, I do have plans in the near future to buy another laptop. Right now, the M1 Mac is on short on the list. MacBook Pro, I should say, is on the short list, depending on what comes. Like, there's rumors that they're going to have some Mac releases in November, so we'll find out. That's on the short list. A Surface Book would be too, depending on the prices of the new, of whatever new Surface Book, or if they actually add a discrete graphics to a Surface Pro, I would be very interested in that. We'll see what Microsoft talks about this week. I don't know the exact day of the event, but I am kind of excited to see what they're doing with that. I will say at least this with the new iPhones, they haven't said that there's going to be any delays or price increases due to short chip shortages. So that's a good thing. So, all right, I'll let you go. It's a long one, I know, but I'm going to go back to listen to your show.
Thank you, Joel. So, like I say, I've got another comment from Joel, but we'll just save that for the next one because this is already kind of stretching out and I need to get this put together and actually get towards headed towards bed. So, but yeah, the I guess the devices continue to come out. I have to be honest, I haven't paid attention to Apple stuff in quite some time. So I don't know. Just haven't kept up with it. I lost interest in it. And even the Microsoft stuff, I haven't really been paying attention very much. Because I know they're trying with this Windows 11 thing, you know, and they're trying to kind of force people to basically buy a bunch of new computers in order to be able to run Windows 11. You know, and of course they're saying, well, it's a security feature, so, you know, some kind of a secure, you got to have some sort of secure a chip on the motherboard in order to run Windows 11, which, yeah, I can understand that, but at the same time, they're not, you know, they can't just arbitrarily force people, you know, to upgrade. Because after all, you know, you look at businesses. Most businesses are, you know, you got some businesses that run Mac computers, including that eye doctor that Vold Vision. You know, they've got Macs on every desk, or at least, you know, or at least the ones I saw. So they're running their business on Macs. But most businesses you go in are running on Windows. And businesses don't like to spend money on just constant upgrades. So, you know, and that's one of the reasons that Windows has been so successful is that, you know, they've really concentrated on making it backwards compatible with really old hardware and software. You know, so they've tried, I don't know, Microsoft has tried things like that before, and then, you know, it didn't go over well, and then they kind of got reined back in, you know, so we'll see what happens with Windows 11, but, you know, I don't know, Microsoft kind of loses its way every once in a while. A lot of companies do, and, you know, they, I don't know what happens to them, you know, whoever the people that are running it kind of get a big head, and, you know, they kind of think that they can begin to dictate what's going to happen. And generally speaking, companies can't do that. You know, it only happens in, you know, for brief periods of time and for, you know, in really special cases. You know, and Apple was kind of a special case, especially with Steve Jobs when he was still around. He could kind of dictate, you know, and they could kind of be dictatorial and say, this is what we're going to do and you're going to like it. And they could kind of get away with it because it was, you know, Apple's kind of a quasi-religious or, you know, sort of quasi-religious structure. You know, and the Apple fans, a lot of them ended up they had a bit of a religious affinity going on towards Apple. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, like a big church structure telling the, you know, a Catholic church telling the, you know, how this is how we're going to run things. You know, with varying degrees of success. Other companies can't do that. You know, and Microsoft may try it, but see how far it goes. So, but I've just been kind of ignoring all that stuff. I'm happy with the, actually, I'm kind of happy with the technology that I have. It all works pretty well, and, you know, so I've really kind of, you know, a lot of sort of matured, and, as far as the technology goes. So then the only thing they can do after that is just change for the sake of change. And there's, you know, there's really probably not much more innovation unless, you know, so you can come up with innovation in different areas. And sometimes innovation slowly happens. It's not, you just can't innovate at manic speeds all the time. You know, because if you're selling devices, you know, basically selling hardware and software for a living, you know, you can't get too far ahead of your customers. So, but I know people get all excited about, you know, new technologies or whatever. And, but at the same time, you know, I don't know. Like I say, I'm kind of happy with the technology that I have. And I think a lot of this stuff really has matured. And like I say, in some cases, they're changing it just for the sake of changing it. You know, hoping that people are going to be fooled into buying the new thing because it's changed, when it's really not, maybe not any better, or in some cases it might even be worse. So, so anyway, better be cutting this off. Hope everyone has had a great weekend. Hope you have a great week coming up. Like I say, this past week, I've just, with that surgery, I'm just astounded by the outcome. It's just, I'm amazed, you know, because I'm, here I am, no glasses at all, and I'm able to see both near and far, and I really am not having any kind of, halo or, you know, starburst type issues. You know, it's just utterly amazing. You know, and of course there's always people that have different experiences, and then it does depend on the surgeon that's doing it, and if they're gonna get really good outcomes, and they have to, you know, you gotta develop best practices. Same way with any business, you know, trucking company, like this trucking company that I work for, they try to have, you know, hire drivers, what you try to do is get people that adhere to best practices and, you know, have kind of figured out what the best practices are and adhere to them. And if you can get an entire company doing that, then you get, you know, you can get things to where they work right most of the time. And that's, you know, doctor, like this Dr. Vold, can end up with a, you know, 90 to 90, you know, maybe 95% accuracy rate when it comes to getting 20/20 outcomes on, like a lens exchange surgery. You know, so it does rely on the technology, and it also relies to a large extent on skill and, you know, adhering to, you know, discovering what the best practices are and sort of adhering to them. So, but in my case, I'm glad to be in the 90% that end up with a really good outcome. And boy, I I'm really astounded. It's amazing, you know, here I am 3 days later with vision that's as good as it's ever been, you know, but not just at distance, but, all the way to close up. And it's it's just a completely seamless experience. You know, so if I didn't know any better, I wouldn't, there's really no difference between that and, the natural lens that I had back when it was flexible. But, except that I'm no longer nearsighted. that's gone. Not nearsighted anymore. Don't need any correction, so... Anyhow, I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.